Iceland's political history from 870 onwards can be quickly summarized. For several centuries, it was self-governing, until fighting between chiefs resulted in many killings of people and burnings of farms in the first half of the 13th century. In 1262, Icelanders invited Norway's king to govern them, reasoning that a distant king could not possibly plunge their land into such disorder as their own chiefs. The thrones of Denmark, Sweden, and Norway were unified in 1397. In 1874, Iceland achieved some self-government, home rule in 1904, and full independence from Denmark in 1944. Beginning in the late Middle Ages, Iceland's economy was stimulated by the rise of trade in dried cod. Because Iceland itself lacked big trees good for shipbuilding, those fish were caught and exported by ships belonging to an assortment of foreigners. In the early 1900s, Iceland at last began to develop a fleet of its own and underwent an explosion of industrial-scale fishing. By 1950, more than 90% of Iceland's total exports were marine products. Already in 1923, Iceland's urban population overtook its rural population in numbers. Iceland is now the most urbanized Scandinavian country, with half its population in the capital of Reykjavik alone. Today, thanks to its abundance of fish, geothermal power, and hydroelectric power from all its rivers, Europe's former poorest country has become one of the world's richest countries on a per capita basis. A great success story. However, Iceland is ecologically the most heavily damaged country in Europe. The government today is very concerned about Iceland's historical curses of soil erosion and sheep overgrazing, which played such a large role in their country's long impoverishment. Many studies of medieval Icelandic settlements and erosion patterns are now underway. When one of my archaeologist friends approached the Icelandic government and began to deliver the usual lengthy justification required in other countries, the government's response was, "Yes, of course we realize that understanding medieval soil erosion will help us understand our present problem. Here is the money. Go do your study." The brief existence of the most remote Viking North Atlantic colony, Vinland, is a separate story, fascinating in its own right. The coast of northeastern North America, reached by the Vikings, lies thousands of miles from Norway, far beyond direct reach of Viking ships. Instead, all Viking ships destined for North America sailed from Greenland. To sail from Greenland to Vinland and then return within the summer sailing season would have left little time for exploring Vinland. Hence, the Vikings established a base camp on Newfoundland, where they could remain for the winter, so as to be able to spend the entire subsequent summer exploring. The known Vinland voyages were organized in Greenland by two sons, a daughter and a daughter-in-law of Eric the Red, who had founded the Greenland colony in 984. Their motive was to reconnoiter the land, in order to see what products it offered, and to gauge its suitability for settlement. We have two sources of information about the Vikings' attempt to settle North America: written accounts and archaeological excavations. The written accounts consist mainly of two sagas describing the initial Vinland voyages of discovery and exploration, transmitted orally for several centuries and finally written down in Iceland during the 1200s. In the absence of independent confirming evidence, scholars tended to dismiss the sagas as fiction and to doubt that the Vikings ever reached the New World, until archaeologists located the Vikings' Newfoundland base camp in 1961. The saga accounts of Vinland are now recognized to be the oldest written descriptions of North America, although scholars still debate the accuracy of their details. They are contained in two separate manuscripts, the Greenlander's Saga and Eric the Red Saga, which are in broad agreement, but have many differences of finer points. They describe up to five separate voyages from Greenland to Vinland within the short span of barely a decade, each voyage involving only a single ship, except that the last voyage used either two or three ships. Despite much searching by archaeologists, only a single Viking camp has been identified and excavated, at Lanso Meadows on the northwest coast of Newfoundland. Radiocarbon dating indicated that the camp was occupied around AD 1000. The site consists of the remains of eight buildings, including three residential halls large enough to hold 80 people, an iron smithy, a carpenter's shop, and boat repair shops, but no farm buildings or farm implements. The sagas describe Vinland as rich in prized resources lacking in Greenland. Yet despite the valuable shiploads of timber, grapes, and animal furs that the Vinland voyagers brought back to Greenland, the voyages were discontinued, and the Lansometo's camp was abandoned. The Norse left nothing of value. Objects recovered were confined to small items that had probably been discarded or else dropped and lost, such as 99 broken iron nails, a single hole nail, a bronze pin, a whetstone, a spindle, one glass bead, and a knitting needle. Evidently, the site was not abandoned hastily, but as part of a planned permanent evacuation back to Greenland. Why did the Norse give up on Vinland, land of plenty? The sagas offer a simple answer to that question. The large population of hostile Indians with whom the Vikings failed to establish good relations. According to the sagas, the first Indians that the Vikings met were a group of 9, of whom they killed 8, while the 9th fled. Not surprisingly, the Indians came back in a fleet of small boats, shot arrows at the Norse, and killed their leader, Eric the Red Son, Torvald. The next group of Norse voyagers did manage to establish a trade with local Indians, until one Viking killed an Indian trying to steal weapons. In the ensuing battle, many Indians were killed before fleeing, but that was enough to convince the Norse of the chronic problems that they would face. For our purposes, the most important thing about the failure of the Vinland colony within 10 years is that it was in part a greatly speeded-up preview of the failure that overtook the Greenland colony after 450 years. Norse Greenland survived much longer because it was closer to Norway and because hostile natives did not make their appearance for the first few centuries. But Greenland shared, albeit in less extreme form, Vinland's twin problems of isolation and Norse inability to establish good relations with Native Americans. If it had not been for Native Americans, the Greenlanders might have survived their ecological problems, and the Vinland settlers might have persisted. In that case, Vinland might have undergone a population explosion, and I might now be writing this book in an Old Norse-based language rather than in English.